From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. For the past month, we here at This Green Earth have been urging you to submit comments regarding the changes our federal administration is proposing to our national monuments. We've said that public comment on this matter matters. And today we have two examples of how and where public input regarding land protection and preservation made a difference.
First, in a move that will help protect one of the Southwest's most iconic landscapes, the Bureau of Land Management recently decided to remove parcels of land residing at the doorstep of Zion National Park from a proposed September oil and gas lease sale.
That's right. The BLM made the decision after considering more than 40,000 public comments and hearing from local business leaders and residents. Formal resolutions were passed in Washington County and the gateway towns of Springdale and Tokerville, supporting removal of the parcels from the lease sale.
David Nimkin is the Senior Southwest Regional Director for the National Parks Conservation Association. He'll join us during the first part of the show to talk more about the process and results and what to look out for next.
Then, in the second half of the show, we'll speak with Summit County Council member Kim Carson about a resolution which supports the need to keep public lands in public hands. The council recently passed this resolution in response to public input. The resolution recognizes the value of federal public lands to Summit County, Utah's economy, recreation, heritage, and quality of life.
Remember, we don't take phone calls during the show, but you can join in on today's discussion by posting your comments and questions to our Facebook page, KPCW This Green Earth. Our connections with and impacts upon the environment. That's what This Green Earth is all about. Stay with us.
Celebrate summer at Utah Olympic Park and join us for an afternoon of slip and soar, June 24th and August 19th. Get set to glide down one of the world's steepest slip and slides and splash into the Spence Eccles Olympic freestyle pool below. No skis necessary. Visit UtahOlympicLegacy.org for tickets and more info.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities and a KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us in the first half of the show today is David Nimkin. He's the Senior Regional Director for the Southwest Region for the National Parks Conservation Association. David, thanks for joining us.
Great, thanks. Nell, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, we were excited to see your press release pop into our inbox because it held a piece of good news, which is always something that's fun to talk about on an environmental radio show. Mm-hmm. So why don't you give us kind of the brief, you know, 2-minute summary of what happened outside Zion with regard to oil and gas leasing?
Yeah, that was indeed good news, but it came about as a lot of hard work and a lot of local investment. There had been late last year, early this year, a nomination of 3 oil leases, really on the border of Zion National Park, up north of the town of Virgin, up on the area that goes into the subway and some of the, more isolated parts of the park. And it had caught a lot of people by surprise, in fact, even the Park Service. And after a lot of advocacy on behalf of the park from local residents, local elected officials, the proposed lease sale of the 3 sites, totaling about 4,500 acres, was deferred earlier this month, and then will be subject to further review in the future.
So let's talk through some of the impacts that, you know, oil and gas leasing and that kind of energy development has on on the land and the area around it. I think, you know, often we think of like roads and trucks, but talk us through some of the other impacts.
Yeah, certainly. If I can just take a moment and sort of go a little bit to the way back machine of 2008, when your listeners and you might recall the proposed and infamous 77 oil leases around Arches, Canyonlands, and Dinosaur National Monuments, National Parks. There was a great outcry about that. The leases had been put up for auction in a way that was sort of uncharacteristic, given some of the informal agreements that had existed between the Park Service and the BLM. And they were sort of underscored by the approval of what are called resource management plans. These are large swatches of areas that the BLM helps to develop, and six of them were completed in early 2008, which authorized these potential lease sales. The specific kinds of concerns that those leases identified were impacts to viewsheds, you know, the idea of looking through the Delicate Arch and seeing pump jacks, considering the impact to night skies. Many people, particularly in Utah and on the Colorado Plateau, just marveling at the almost pristine nature of our night skies that are impacted by human activity, by development, by lights, by roads, but also by dust. Looking at impacts to wildlife and migration corridors that are impacted, just even the experience of coming into the park and, you know, passing through an industrial zone. Sometimes we think only about the development on the well pad itself, but there are sort of ancillary elements that include the roads, the lights, the trucks, the dust, just the human activity that doesn't seem consistent with the park experience. And just taking it just one step further, one of the outcomes from the events in 2008 and the early part of the administration, the Obama administration, was the development of a new protocol called Master Lease Planning, which would be a little bit more granular focus on within the context of these resource management plans, how those areas that are considered for development might be affecting those kinds of intrinsic values of both national parks, but down in the area of Moab, how it would impact recreational interests as well. And I think that was a particular consideration. And the management, the master leasing plans brought stakeholders together to sort of identify where oil and gas development should not occur and why it would affect certain values, or where certain stipulations, like something called no standing occupancy, so it would not be visible, would be done. And the master lease plan for Moab resulted in about 450,000 acres in and around the parks in southeastern Utah being affected and restricted in some of the development purposes. Probably more than you wanted to hear, but it gives a context for maybe where we are now.
We're speaking with David Nimkin. He is the Senior Southwest Regional Director for the National Parks Conservation Association. We're talking about the BLM's recent announcement that they will not be putting up for lease three parcels of land surrounding or nearby adjacent to Zion National Park. David, I want to go back to these three parcels of land. They say they total about 4,500 acres. They're originally proposed for leasing back in the fall of 2016, correct?
Correct.
So actually under the previous administration, the BLM under and then in January, an environmental assessment was done of those lands. And if I understand this, the BLM concluded that there would be no significant impact from leasing these proposed parcels. right?
Correct.
All right. And then the a period of time for public input on this process, and that occurred over these last few months?
Correct.
Okay. So what was the public input?
So I think then part of what happened, because this was not sort of well vetted in many respects. In fact, the superintendent at Zion National Park had not been fully apprised of this, and it was not fully apparent. The other part of this, and that's why I told you about these resource management plans, is that the resource management plan for southwestern Utah that relates to Zion National Park is over 20 years old, and it allowed for these kinds of developments. There was no overlay like these master lease plans, and so that's what the BLM is obligated to do. If someone comes to them and nominates an area that they would like to drill, the BLM is obligated to then put them up for lease and do some preliminary environmental assessments. What became apparent as this was more widely known among people in the community is that people who live up in the area, up on that road north of Virgin, began to call their local elected representatives in Springdale in Washington County. They called us and other conservation groups. There was a series of discussions in local city councils and the town of Springdale, the town of Tokerville, and surprisingly the county commission in Washington County all passed resolutions suggesting that this is an area that should not be drilled, that for a variety of reasons, the most popular national park in the state of Utah, in fact, one of the most visited in the entire country, should not be subjected to this kind of industrial use. A day before the decision was announced by the BLM, that the governor of Utah, Governor Herbert, wrote a letter requesting that these parcels be deferred, representing how important Zion National Park and the tourism and recreation economy is to the state, which was really surprising in many ways. But on some levels, it underscores this kind of tension we have in our state that tries to balance the recreation and tourism benefits with extraction industries. And certainly when you have a park like Zion that is subject to those kinds of challenges, I guess tourism and recreation and protection wins.
Right.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned hearing from Governor Herbert was a little surprising. That was kind of my next question.
And
Some of these rural, southern Utah areas are always thought of as, not huge supporters of public lands, not huge supporters of conservation,
not huge supporters of government.
And so were these kind of some unlikely allies, I suppose?
Well, I think you could say that. I think you have to consider it as situational. Obviously, you don't get that all the time. But I think this underscores a principle that we feel is critically important. And part of what we fear is not going to be sustained in this administration where we're talking about, quote, energy independence or energy dominance, is that these kinds of maybe nuanced considerations of where and how development should occur may not be the rule, as it was certainly being represented in the previous administration. So there was not a formal process in this case. It took citizen action, local voices, engagement of people at various levels in government and business leaders to sort of raise the bar to those whose voices perhaps are considered dominant, i.e., local elected leaders or our governor, to make this happen. what we fear is that the kinds of processes like these master lease plans that bring different stakeholders together and can ultimately come up with a plan that is reasonable, that seems balanced, that doesn't compromise certain values, that can be achieved. Now, it may not be sustained in the Trump administration, but the practice, the process, the outreach, the collaboration is something that can be done. And we would only hope that this is the kind of example where future energy development proposals would get this kind of planning first, leasing later, rather than going through this exercise of putting it out to lease and then having to organize local constituencies, protests, and perhaps litigation.
Now, you mentioned that the resource management plan for the area around Zion is over 20 years old. Mm. And until that resource management plan is updated or edited, this is really just a temporary solution, this decision not to lease these parcels. So what are the next steps? You know, is the resource management plan changed? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it is temporary, and that's why there's certainly a need for both village vigilance and public attention. What the BLM will be doing, hopefully, is looking at amending the existing resource management plan. Typically, those are not done. They're overdue. The one in Southwest Utah is overdue, but they can do a supplemental analysis that sort of looks at in a granular level, like these master leasing plans, to sort of evaluate where and how energy development should occur. And so this is sort of, you know, putting the cart after the horse and sort of doing the kind of analysis that perhaps should have been done earlier, or could have been done earlier. And that kind of process will engage the public. It is regulated by NEPA, and there will be opportunities for the public to weigh in on this. So that's really the next step and what we're advocating for, that they do this kind of supplemental analysis. But I don't believe that I've heard from the BLM that that's in fact what they're going to do, but that's what they should do.
So these three parcels have been deferred, meaning they're still potentially in play?
They could be. So what happens is that the BLM has periodic lease sales, and that's what these three parcels were scheduled for lease sale in September. And the decision to defer them is just that. It's temporary. Hmm. It's subject to perhaps another period when the leases would be auctioned off. And it's entirely possible that they could be deferred more permanently, subject to this supplemental analysis in the resource management plan. But that's not where we are right now. And, you know, the challenge that we face, honestly, is uncertainty with respect to what the Trump administration is going to propose and how they're going to pursue their mantra of achieving energy independence, and what that and looking at ways to expedite energy development on federal lands. So this action by the BLM in Utah flies in the face of what we believe to be the priorities of this current administration.
So this is also relevant to several other national parks and federal lands here in the Southwest. Can you give us a quick summary of that?
Sure. There are a number of parks that have been subject to energy development. This is the Colorado Basin, Colorado Plateau, is an area that, you know, has been highlighted with a lot of energy potential. And given the fact that the Colorado Plateau is the most dense and populated national park area in the continental United States, there are invariably going to be conflicts. So I could say that presently there are some leases that are under consideration literally within a third of a mile of Dinosaur National Monument by Zion, and about a half a mile from the visitor center, about a third of a mile from the quarry wall, that there is considerable interest in perhaps the same kind of action with the BLM, that local citizens need to be representing how important the monument is for the economic vitality of the Uinta Basin. Certainly oil and gas is a big part of that equation. But again, you might be able to say, well, maybe we should limit the development of energy in the area north of U.S. Highway 40, for example, that runs through Vernal. That would go up towards Dinosaur and the energy development being south of there. Similarly, there are challenges as far removed in areas we work at Carlsbad Caverns National Park and in southeastern New Mexico. And this is in the Permian Basin, huge energy development, you think West Texas. Mm-hmm. But one of the considerations there is that a lot of the caverns in that cave and karst area have not been fully identified, and there's been kind of an informal agreement with the Park Service that drilling into the crust would be restricted in certain areas. That now might be off the table, and we're advocating that there be a more careful consideration and stipulations for drilling that wouldn't affect that. There are issues at Chaco Historic Culture Monument in northern New Mexico. This is an area that is sacred, that is profoundly fragile. Again, it too is in a San Juan Basin energy-rich zone, and there is a present effort that was supported by the previous administration to come out with a plan that would engage different stakeholders to say the greater Chacoan landscape, because that's a part of the whole cultural story, needs to be considered and protected. Similarly, that's on Navajo land, and there needs to be a consideration of issues of economic and environmental justice that applies. So you protect the resource, but it also provides a source of revenue. And there are other parks you could go on. I know we're running up against time, but we're concerned that the kinds of pressures that seemingly are being represented to develop more oil and gas, particularly in the Southwest, is running against the efforts we have to protect these just extraordinary cultural resources, and particularly at a time when the visitation to these parks is booming, double-digit increases year over year.
Well, David, thank you so much for joining us today. You're right in that we do have to wrap up here. But if our listeners are interested in reading more about this, learning more about this, getting involved, what do you recommend? Where do they go?
Well, we'd love them to visit our website, which is npca.org. And some of the oil and gas issues are featured in a report we just put out called Out of Balance, which you can find on that website.
Fantastic. Perfect. That was David Nimkin, the Senior Regional Director for the Southwest Region of the National Parks Conservation Association. David, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Let's take a break for some underwriters. And when we come back, we'll be speaking with Kim Carson, Summit County Council member, about a resolution they recently passed in support of public lands. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We are committed to serving Park City and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information at bhhsutah.com or one of our 24 offices throughout Summit and Wasatch counties.
Hi, this is Dr. Juliana Miller from Miller Orthodontics, a proud supporter of The Local View with Randy Barton. With a combined 45 years of orthodontic experience, my husband and I are now raising our family and working full-time in the Park City community. There are so many reasons to smile in Park City. More information at m2ortho.com.
Hey, some upbeat music, I thought, since we
had
some
in honor of our upbeat show.
Unbelievable. So that was a great little interview with Dave Nimkin from the National Parks Conservation Association about the BLM and the announcing of deferring, at least, the leasing of some parcels around and adjacent to Zion National Park. And the reason I mention that again is that a lot of that was due to public input. They got a lot of public input, public outcry about the consequences and the impacts of leasing that land to oil and natural gas exploration. And in that case, public input mattered and made a big difference, even in a conservative pockets of like Washington County. The Washington County Council came out in opposition to that lease. So I use that as kind of a segue to our conversation with Kim Carson, the Summit County Council member, about a resolution they recently passed in support of, you know, continuing federal management of public lands here in Summit County. And first of all, Kim, thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, good morning, and thanks for having me.
And to finish that thought is that I'm assuming that one of the reasons this resolution was adopted because you got some public input or public support for a resolution of that matter, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's summarize what the resolution is about
first.
Can you give us a quick thumbnail sketch of that?
Well, it is. I think we had to go to a third page. It's rather lengthy.
Yeah.
but basically, it voices our support for, as you said, the federal management of public lands and all the reasons why these federal lands are so important to us as Summit County citizens, but also as, you know, citizens on a national level.
And let's talk about public lands or federal lands, I guess, in Summit County. Can you give us a sketch of what that includes?
Mm-hmm. Approximately, I believe it's around 45% of Summit County is federally owned. And our federal land management managers are primarily the Forest Service. We have very little BLM. We just have a few small pockets of BLM holdings.
So when did you start to hear about this from the community, you know, hear support for a resolution like this?
Well, actually, when I first started thinking about bringing one to the council was when I was on city tour. I met Rachel Richards, who is a county commissioner for Pitkin County, Colorado. And we had dinner with her one night, and she was very alarmed about this initiative building in Utah and spreading into Colorado for the transfer of public lands back to the states. And so Pitkin County had developed a resolution opposed to the transfer of federal lands. And so we had been communicating via email, and I had her send me some samples that she had from Colorado. And I had looked at those, and then we got busy with other things like Eastern Summit County Development Code issues and other things. Mm. And last fall, I had a conversation with Becky Yee, who's a local member of the Sierra Club, and she had started to get active in the Keep Public Lands in Public Hands initiative. So I had conversations with her, and that's when the email started to come in asking the county to do something. And then it kind of built up in March. And we were looking at timing in developing something. Our new legislative coordinator with the county, Jana Young, mm-hmm. has been instrumental in helping with issues like this. And I gave her the information I had, and she wrote the first draft. And we also had a draft that was written by Becky Yee and another local proponent of this initiative, and that was Dee Browning So we met with them, talked about some of their concerns and things that they would like to see in the resolution, and then went from there.
Yeah, and the full title, just to share that, is a resolution recognizing the value of federal public lands to Summit County, Utah's economy, recreation, heritage, and quality of life. And this resolution was adopted in last Wednesday. Last mm-hmm. Wednesday. And you can go online and read the full resolution. 2017-10 is its number. So let's talk about then the value of this resolution. In the absence of this resolution, or in the absence of the federal government managing these lands, who would take over management of it?
Well, the state, and it goes back to 2012, the Utah legislature passed HB 148, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that bill provided a framework for starting to research what it would take to have Utah accept the public lands if they were to be transferred back. So there was part of it was having a study commissioned by it was Utah State, University of Utah, and Weber State. Hmm. And then part of it was having each county develop a resource management plan for the counties and the federal lands within those counties. So we've been working on that and hope to have that back in front of council, I think, towards the end of next month, either on the 19th or the 26th. We'll be discussing that again. And so we've had a lot of public...
Right,
public meetings and some surveys
yeah.
that people could participate in.
Looking statewide, have any other counties done something like this, done a public lands resolution?
No, we're the first county. There's been a couple municipalities. Salt Lake City, they first passed one in 15, and then I don't remember the other one. I think could have been Moab. But.
Okay, so first county to do it. So yes. Is there any concern that there might be pushback from the state in other ways or unintended consequences of this?
Yes, there's always that concern.
Sure.
Right.
But we just felt this was very mm-hmm. important for us to make this statement. Mm-hmm. You know, I was going back and reviewing that study that was commissioned, and it bases the feasibility of the transfer and the state being able to afford to manage the lands. Their reference point for oil was at $92 per barrel.
Whoa.
That was their reference point. And they had a lot of different scenarios, but a lot of those didn't produce enough revenue. And, you know, this morning it's at $43 per barrel.
Yeah, it hasn't been $92
and,
in the back in
you know,
5
I've
or 6 years.
I've heard other county commissioners say, well, you know, it's always a 7-year cycle. It's going to come back. And I think it's just too volatile. And then there's other places we are really looking, and I'm not saying we, but nationally, there's a focus on producing more energy resources within the United States.
Energy independence.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there's mantra. More of that going on across the country. And a lot of what we have is pretty expensive to produce.
Yeah.
And so I think even if it does come back, we wouldn't be the first place that activity would be taking place.
Right.
It takes a while to build that back up.
Okay.
And I think they had looked at a goal of increasing oil production by at least 15%.
So the fear is that if, in the absence of federally, the federal government, say the BLM or other groups managing it, the state would manage it.
Yes.
And the state would have different missions and visions and objectives.
Yes, I mean, in this report, it talked about raising grazing fees, raising royalties.
Raising, you mean revenue, creating revenue,
right.
Not just raising the fee, but creating revenue, seeing these as a revenues opportunity.
Exactly.
Business opportunities.
Right. So it's directly tied to increase oil and gas exploration.
Sure.
And we do have some
logging,
of that on the north slope of the Uintas.
Yeah.
And we have increased some timber production also and timber harvesting. And I think that can actually be a good tool for us trying to improve watershed areas and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's areas that I wouldn't mind seeing an increase in timber harvesting. And I am in favor of helping to support our local lumber mills that are left in the county.
Right.
but not a, a wholesale opening of, you know, timber sales throughout the forest.
Right.
Okay. Well, I'm curious, you know, obviously there was a lot of support for this. Did you hear any opposition? Like, the county passed the resolution unanimously.
We did. And I did not receive any opposition wow. personally. Okay. And easily had over 75 emails regarding it and some phone calls.
Okay. Wow. Now counties, municipalities pass resolutions all the time.
Uh-huh.
Take a minute or two to explain, what does a resolution do and what does it not do?
Well, it doesn't commit us to any particular action.
Okay.
It's basically a statement of support for something, commitment to an idea or a philosophy.
It says who you are.
Right.
You know, where you stand on certain right. certain items, certain right. issues. Okay.
And, you know, as I reread the resolution, I feel like one area we could have been stronger in was talking about the economics of the transfer back to the state. And I think for me, you know, the environmental component, of course, is incredibly important. But then the economics of it, I'm really concerned about some of the responsibility of managing those lands falling back on the counties as another unfunded mandate.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that happens quite a bit.
So as a backdrop for this conversation about the resolution, let's give some context for what is happening at the state level and the federal level. You know, tell us a little bit about what our Utah legislators are trying to do.
You know, as far as I know, even with oil prices where they are, they're still strong proponents of the transfer of land back to the state. They say, you know, they use the term local control.
Mm-hmm.
And they have some valid issues in southeastern Utah. They haven't had a great relationship with their land managers. I always believe that instead of just walking away and going for the nuclear option,
right,
you try to build those relationships and work through it. We have a new district ranger here in Summit County for the Camas Heber district, and I haven't met him yet, but, you know, we might not have the strongest relationships, but we're going to work on building those and implementing some things. And we've got a good relationship with Rick Schuler on the North Slope, because even though that area affects people that actually reside in Wyoming, it's an important part of their lives too. So we want to work closely with those residents and with the Forest Service on that side of the county also.
We're speaking with Kim Carson. She is a Summit County Council member, and she's here talking about, among other things, a resolution recently passed that recognizes the value of federal public lands to Summit County. Now, one thing that is mentioned in the resolution that has an economic position to it, it does say that a significant portion of Summit County's economic livelihood rests on having an active and desirable natural resources, recreation, and tourism industry. The rate of employment in the, let's say, tourism industry is over double the national rate. It's 19.4% here, and then nationally it's 9.5%. So, mm-hmm. so there is some information,
right? There is
about the value mm-hmm. of this of these federal lands with respect to supporting tourism, recreation, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's good. Is that, you even sneak in a bit here about Bears Ears National Monument.
We did. We were asked specifically to do that, and I think we took the approach that all public lands are of value.
Yeah.
And those that travel here often then continue their trip to see places in southern Utah, either one of our five national parks or the national monuments. So we're connected. And
good. And you can go to regulations.gov to submit your public comments.
Yes, you can.
About Bears Ears.
Yes.
And all the other national monuments that are under review, that are under review right now by the Department of Interior. And submit your public comments, because public comments matter on these issues.
Well, they do. And I do want to mention that I had referenced that study that came out of the 2012 legislation. And it also formed the Public Lands Policy Coordinating Office. So if you Google Utah Public Lands Policy Coordinating Office, on there you can find this study. And again, it provides a framework for transferring public lands into state ownership.
And can you find the resource management, the county's resource management plan online?
It's on our website. It's still in draft form, of course, because it hasn't been adopted.
Right.
And when we do discuss it, we will, of course, have a public hearing.
Okay. A couple more minutes. You know, you have another resolution coming up. Do you know that, Kim? This one. You ready?
Okay, remind me.
This one's titled A Resolution Reaffirming Summit County's Commitment to Efforts to Address Global Climate Change. So that's going to be discussed, I believe, in tomorrow's workshop. Mm-hmm. As part of tomorrow's workshops and stuff.
So I'll let Leslie ask me about that when I'm on Thursday morning have our discussion.
How it goes. But you're going to be talking about tomorrow at Colville.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And this is, again, support of efforts to address global climate change, why the administration's extracting themselves from the Paris climate treaties and protocols is a bad idea, the consequences associated with that. And so this is a resolution in support of those efforts.
It is. And I think that's another important thing when you're talking about the economy, too, because as global warming increases, we will see our snowpack decrease. And not only for our particular economy here in Summit County, but just the water resources. I was reading an article in the Trib just a couple days ago about, the importance of the snowpack to our overall water supply in the state of Utah.
Yeah. And you know what?
The study that came out of the group that's working on a water master plan for the state, and I know there's another term for it, they finally recognized global warming in that. So
it is interesting to watch that happen. There's a lot of discussion of that, I think, at our local level with the East Canyon Watershed Committee. But some of the other groups statewide have maybe been a little slower to integrate that into their planning. But it seems pretty widespread now, which is exciting. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And here's one, the county is adopting planning onto a discuss this resolution. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I think each one of us should have our own resolutions. And it should be the same thing. It should say a resolution reaffirming my commitment to efforts to address global climate. And go through this resolution and say, what am I going to do to reduce my consumption of coal, oil, and natural gas? Mm-hmm. What are the five things that I can do to do that? Because each one of us has to have our own energy policy. The federal government should have an energy policy. Maybe states have energy, but each one of us should have our own energy policy.
And Chris Cherniak, 2017-11.
My energy policy. Yeah, my family's energy policy. What are we going to do to reduce coal, oil, and natural gas consumption on an individual? Because that matters too.
I do drive a hybrid car.
Okay.
But it's one reason I rarely come into the studio for my interviews that I do every 5 weeks. When it's my turn, because I live out in Silver Creek and it's 20 minutes plus to come in. And I really do work on trying to group my errands and limit the trips.
Okay. So those are efforts.
It's just little things add up.
With oil in mind in that case. So each one of us should sit down and figure out what we're going to do as individuals to make a difference, because it does matter. I know people will say, it doesn't matter. I've talked to people who are environmentalists who say, not idling my vehicle, it doesn't make any difference. It's really the federal government. We need a broad energy policy, and we need to support more solar. Those things help too. But each one of us, throw water in there while you're at it, because that's what really, when you mentioned water, because here water equals energy, and water is precious in this state. So what are we going to do to reduce our water consumption too? So all of those things are in play, and we just need to take personal responsibility to make a difference. Mm-hmm. We have a phone call. We don't take phone calls right now.
That's right. But you can email us at thisgreenearthradio.
Thanks.
At Gmail, of course.
Yes. Wrap up, Kim, anything else?
I just want to, again, thank those citizens that reached out to us, Becky Yee, Dee Browning, P. Peter Gatch, Peter Metcalf, they were all very strong supporters. And we need that when we're putting ourselves out to do something like this. We just really appreciate it.
Good. Well, thanks so much for joining
thanks,
us, Kim.
And we'll see you tomorrow at the calendar. I plan to be there because you're going to have a sustainability presentation. Mm-hmm. Lisa Yoder.
I'm really looking
forward
to that discussion.
There's a lot of environmental issues on the docket.
Yep. It's a hot place to be, those county council meetings.
It's in Colville.
Oh, yes.
It's in Colville. It's not
and
the
I
Richmond
don't think it's
going
to be
all right,
a
I hope
nine
you're
hour
carpooling.
Ride your bike to Colville and go what says. Okay. Kim, thanks again. And we'll see you in
thanks.
5 months when you come. Every five, oh, is it
five weeks? Yeah, when we rotate through
the. But right, maybe we could get her on the 5 month schedule. There you go.
All right. Let's take a break for some underwriters and we come back. We got some news items to cover, right?
We do.
Yes?
Yeah.
It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Support for KPCW programming has been provided by the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting Utah's remaining Red Rock Wilderness lands. SUWA and Utah's Red Rock Wilderness need your support now more than ever. To learn more about how you can become involved, please visit the SUWA website at suwa.org.
Hi, this is Molly from Recycle Utah. Did you know that computers, cell phones, printers, and other electronics contain hazardous materials? These items are recyclable at Recycle Utah for a fee. Bring them to the center Monday through Saturday, 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Visit recycleutah.org for details on fees and items accepted.
Recycle Utah is your local nonprofit recycling drop-off center, bringing water conservation ideas to you for over 25 years, and we support KPCW.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability and how each one of us can develop their own energy policy.
Absolutely.
I'm Chris Cherniak.
I fully support that. I'm Nell Larson.
And we got a couple items. But let's start with this one, butterflies.
Yeah.
There's butterfly. The butterflies are back.
Oh, and they're everywhere this summer, this spring. It's been fun to watch them.
We should have a lepidopterist come on and talk a little more in detail.
We should.
Because what few things we're about to say are probably wildly
wildly right.
incorrect.
I mean, I have some information from a lepidopterist in an email that we can share.
All right.
So, you know, that's...
Do you happen to have that email
That's
up?
Good enough. Well, yeah. So last year, we had... Chris and I had a debate... These butterflies we were seeing, Chris said, hey, I think I'm seeing like a ton of monarchs out there.
They were.
We've been talking a lot about monarchs and milkweed and you know
and
all the
were.
Things we can do there. And as usual,
and I was right.
Chris was wrong. So,
well, according to you.
I went to the Rindernecks, Sally and Rod Rindernecht, who I know through my work at Swanner. And they are avid, I don't know, lepidopterist, butterfly...
Yeah.
enthusiasts and are really knowledgeable about this stuff. And so they explain that these are swallowtails and there are several different kinds. And there are some of the ones we're seeing are the Western tiger swallowtail, the two-tailed swallowtail. Which is actually the largest Western butterfly. So if you see, I think I saw one the other day on the hike. If you see a huge butterfly and you can kind of make
so
out
it's
the double
tails. So it's
noticeably
bigger than just
This is like a really big butterfly. I'm motioning here in the studio when we have our webcam and you'll be able to
see exactly how big this thing
larger
is.
Than a monarch and then the pale swallowtail. And so you can see those out and about, and those are the ones they're generally sort of black and yellow,
right? Monarch-ish sort of looking if you didn't know any better.
Less orangish, I would say,
but much more yellowish.
Speaking in very technical terms this morning.
So, all right. So they're all about. So
yeah.
It's not just one type.
Right.
See if you can figure out which one's the giant one, And what were the other two?
The double-tailed, or the two-tailed. And then there's also the pale swallowtail and the tiger, the western tiger
western
swallowtail.
Western tiger.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's just, I mean, there are dozens and dozens of varieties of butterflies around here. In fact, this is a very popular area for butterfly watching. Right.
Yeah. And I think that kind of goes hand in hand with all of the wildflowers that we have here, these incredible wildflowers.
And
up
they're
in the mountains,
out, too,
which are also just on fire this spring. It's fun to watch.
And are they out at Swanner?
They are. They're gorgeous. We get sort of an earlier bloom up on the northern side of the preserve on the hillside where you have like the Glenwild and Stealth and Blackhawk trails.
Oh,
that south facing hillside. It's kind of dominated by sagebrush.
Are there trails around there that people, do you have a butterfly trail?
Well, we don't have a butterfly trail, but we have other trails, Chris, that are very frequently used. So Blackhawk, Stealth, and Glenwild trails are on the nature preserve. And if you take a walk on those, that's great, great wildflower watching, especially like earlier in this, or sort of like mid-spring. And now they're starting to come out more on the south side of the preserve in the wetlands. So it's,
what was the trail I told you I was on Sunday? RTS?
The RTS trail
kind
and the Runnemuck trail.
And Runnemuck.
Both have gorgeous wildflowers right now.
Right now?
Mm-hmm.
So I was on the RTS.
And great wildflower watching.
Okay. So, yes. And bird watching, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I was on the RTS trail, which is both, you know, hiking and biking. But it's not a great mountain bike trail. It's just flat. It's not very challenging. So the point is, don't take your mountain bike. Let us just walk on that trail and appreciate the sounds and the animals and the insects that are flying about there. So the RTS trail, which is on the opposite side of Runnemuck.
Exactly. Across the UOP road.
All right. So
great wildflowers.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's our butterfly update.
Keep an eye out for those swallowtails.
Swallowtails and others. Let us know what you see. We got to take one more break, and we come back. We got
to
wrap up.
Time to wrap up.
This Green Earth. Come on.
Hi, I'm Tom Pettigrew from Park City Mountain and a proud supporter of KPCW. From kids' rope courses to zip lines and hiking trails to the bike park, Park City offers a wide range of family-friendly activities all summer long. More information on new summer activities and all the other programs can be found at parkcitymountain.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Go.
Here we go. It's time to wrap up. Another show, another This Green Earth. We want to thank today's guests, of course, David Nimpkin from the National Parks Conservation Association for talking to us about the oil and gas leasing around Zion National Park and the recent decision to defer that.
Right, and also Kim Carson, the Summit County Council member, talking about resolutions they passed supporting continued federal management of public lands here in Summit County, and a resolution they're going to be discussing tomorrow's meeting on supporting efforts with respect to global climate change. Of course, let's thank our underwriters and sponsors who make the show possible. They include Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance,
Vail Epic Promise,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties,
San Francisco Design,
Park City Mountain,
and of course, listeners like you.
Join us on Facebook at KPCW This Green Earth.
And email us at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org with your comments.